This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard, and we're going to talk about, that's right, there's a third special session coming up. We've also got some other stories from the week. And if you're watching live right now on Facebook, please feel free to drop a comment. Let us know where you're watching from. If you have any questions during the show, please feel free to drop them down there. But right now I'm joined by Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, who is very, very excited about this third special session. I know that you've been looking forward to it. You've hoped that there'll be a fourth, a fifth, maybe a sixth, you know. This perpetual legislature, part-time legislature that we now live in. But, you know, looking forward at this, you know, at this third special session that was announced this week, first of all, I think it's important to kind of cover what hasn't happened, which is that there hasn't been any penalties for the quorum-breaking Democrats, and it doesn't really look like there is going to be.
That's right. There's that. And then also, by the way, something that was on the last special session agenda that didn't get addressed, which is actually restructuring quorum. So, again, this could happen again, and there'd be no penalties.
Right. I mean, we haven't really, have we heard from Democrats as to whether or not this is something they could potentially consider doing again?
No. There's been rumblings, right, of like, you know, by not bringing up or by holding Republicans hostage to say, you can't bring up this issue because if you do, we're going to leave again, right? There's been rumblings of that, but no, I haven't heard anything specific.
So this was a pretty small list of agenda items. Right. So, you know, a special session, they last up to 30 days at a time. Governor can put items on the call. Those are the only items that the legislature can consider. He, of course, can add more items at any time. You look back at the first and the second session this summer, you had 12, 13, 14 priorities that the governor put on there. Not all of those obviously made it across the finish line. This time, the list was just five items.
That's right. I think we've known for a while, or it's been known for a while, right, that they at least signaled redistricting would be something that would be brought up. Originally, it was kind of talked about in October, but that is chief among kind of the five items on there.
Right, redistricting, drawing those legislative maps. This was delayed because of the census, was delayed because of COVID from last year, kind of created this whole domino effect. So now they're going to be actually drawing those lines in October.
Correct. And I think the important takeaway from that, outside of just drawing the lines for their own districts, right, is that this also, and they passed a bill to this effect during the second special session, potentially delays primary elections, candidate filing periods, all of those things for these kind of unknown districts until they're written.
Well, I mean, redistricting, maybe is that enough of a carrot to keep Democrats there?
That is a yet to be seen, right? I think that there's a lot of assumptions that could be made there, but yeah, we don't know.
Surely they'd want a part in being able to draw their own district.
Sure. It's important, too, right? Like, this is the first time that Texas is going to be doing redistricting without being under kind of this federal scrutiny, if you will, for the first time in 50 years, right, where it's like you could basically assume it's going to go to, there's going to be a lawsuit, it's going to go to the judiciary, right? Obviously, I think that would happen, but it will happen in a different way, and so... Yeah.
Another item on that list that is actually carried over from the previous sessions is youth sports, girls sports.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Specifically, they want the Senate version of Senate Bill 29 as it passed in the regular session. For those that have been following the issue, this is specific to requiring that, you know, public school students, right, play in sports that are assigned to their biological sex at birth, right? It's important, some of the wording there, obviously, but that it's for UIL sports in public schools. This has been a kind of perennial issue at this point, I suppose. And the House has kind of been the hang up there.
This has passed the Senate multiple times. Mm-hmm. House still hasn't made it through.
Correct. Of course, it goes through a committee chaired by a Democrat who is opposed to it, seemingly, right? And Harold Dutton.
Right. Another issue that we'll talk about a little bit more in depth later is appropriating some of this federal COVID relief money that's been given to Texas.
Correct. Yeah. Back, I think it was February or early March, the federal government, Congress, right, passed this huge $1 trillion relief plan for COVID relief to the states. Some of it's earmarked to certain things like local government specifically, these different things. But yeah, that's they've had this money and we've got allocated. It's sitting in an account, essentially.
Another thing they are put on the call to address, and this was kind of moved over from the back half of the second special session, is vaccine mandates. And I think the wording on this is very important. Mm-hmm. We had, of course, yesterday, President Joe Biden announce his sweeping mandate, essentially saying what federal employees, mm-hmm. federal contractors, employers that hire 100 or more people right. need to require the vaccine. And you saw Governor Abbott immediately kind of saying, we're already working on this. Right. It's on the special session agenda call. But I want to read the exact language on it because I think it's an important distinction because you have the governor saying, yes, we're working on it. Like the legislature's already got this on their mm-hmm. agenda. And the actual terminology on here is legislation regarding whether any state or local governmental entities in Texas can mandate that an individual receive a COVID-19 vaccine. And interestingly, and if so, what exemptions should apply to such mandate? So not only is it not applying to employers, something that the governor has been hesitant to do, but it also doesn't apply really to federal mandates.
Right.
And it even has that big, and if so, maybe right. where perhaps the legislature could pass a bill that says you can mandate the vaccine.
Right. It's very similar to last special session when he put on under the education plank, if you will, of the call for masks, right, where he basically left it open to where, like, well, if the legislature decides, mm-hmm. I'm not going to stand in the way. It's certainly interesting.
The one new issue on here, I think it's really the only new issue that was added, is dog tethering, which right. I think a lot of people hadn't even heard of, didn't know that this was a priority, and this made the list for
That's
the
right.
five.
It was a bill that made it all the way to the governor's desk during the regular session. It was vetoed, my understanding vetoed at the request of several lawmakers who had written him a letter, but vetoed to essentially say, it was almost too much where it put in a bunch of regulation on how you can tether or restrain a dog. This is, of course, as you know, an issue that comes up in different ways every session, but it hit it all the way to the governor's desk this go around.
Yeah, all the way to the governor's desk. He vetoed it, said, okay, we're against animal abuse. Most people would say, right,
sure.
We are. But the bill itself kind of laid out, we got to measure exactly how long your leash is
right.
and your water has to be potable, which is kind of a difficult standard.
Sure.
And this number of regulations, and he vetoed it. But, that crowd has been pretty loud, I guess. I mean, we've
right.
seen them be pretty loud in other sessions that we've worked. And it looks like maybe he's caving them or throwing them a bone, pardon the pun. Maybe
what I find interesting about it, right, is like when I think of someone putting an emergency item on something, it tends to send the signal that it's an emergency,
mm-hmm.
right? So this obviously wasn't as much of an emergency to put on the first special session call or the second special session call. Suddenly we've got
now it's an emergency.
Third, right?
Now it's an emergency. That's an important point to make because these are the five priorities that we've got for this special session agenda. But I think most of the attention, most of the criticism we've seen on this has not been on what was included on the list of priorities, but actually what didn't seem to make the list.
That's right. As we talked about, right, he kind of, it seems like just for what gave up on banning school mask mandates,
right?
Which is got its own saga, if you will. Of course, the legislature refusing to do this in the regular session, and then of course seemingly refusing to do it in the last special session
mm-hmm.
when it was on the call. Of course, as we talked about, it's this ban on he didn't even bring up give lip service once again to the ban on child gender mutilation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that he said had nil chance of passing in the House. You then saw a bill get a majority of members co-authoring
right.
it, saying that presumably if everybody who co-authored it voted for it, it would pass the House. This bill has passed the Senate multiple times
in different
prior,
ways. That's
in
right.
different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, some people saying, well, are dogs more important than our children?
Right. Suddenly, that seems to be more of an emergency, right, is what mm-hmm. I would certainly read into this. You've got monument protection, which of course is a Texas GOP priority that didn't get across the finish line. You've got also no ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying, right,
mm-hmm.
which is something that, ballot language is 95-96% of Republican
mm-hmm.
support. Once again, not on them. That was something that died, right, in the last few days of the regular session, at least on the local level. And then I think, what I find also interesting is that we didn't include property tax relief or additional property tax relief in this special session.
Right. Some of the stuff they did do sort of tinkered on the edges gave a little bit of a break to certain classes of people.
Right.
There were, however, multiple bills that would have either created long-lasting property tax relief. There was actually legislation that would give a one-time a cut, you know, in a sense of actual relief, right? Where, you know, I think the metric for relief is, was your bill bigger or smaller this year than it was last year? Previous efforts we've seen from the legislature have only slowed the growth, that, right? So,
correct.
Okay, well, your bill went up, but not as much as it could have.
Right.
It's not on the call. We were talking earlier, though, it was interesting to see yesterday that you actually see potentially some movement from the House that they might actually want this issue to be added to the call.
Yeah, House Speaker Dade Phelan yesterday, I believe it was, tweeted his support for Senate Bill 91, which for those that aren't familiar, Senate Bill 91 was a bill in the last special session that concluded last week or whenever it was, that was filed, right, the beginning of the week. Within 4 days, the Senate had heard it and passed it out. And that was the only bill that really made it that would have actually provided relief. Granted, it was one time, but would have provided what's called like tangible tax relief that could be felt by Texans. And ultimately what that does is it uses money to buy down school maintenance and operation taxes. The House has had a bill by State Representative Tom Oliverson now multiple times, House Bill 122, which is probably, I would say, the preferred bill, which is like it just buys down school maintenance and operation taxes using additional revenue that we've gotten, surplus revenue, buy it down to where basically it's zero, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're effectively getting rid of that portion of the property tax.
Right. I mean, another issue, I mean, you mentioned it, right? Is monument protection, right? I mean, you see on TV this week, I think in Virginia, right? Where they took down the Robert E. Lee statue at the Capitol. We've seen things like that happen in Texas, you know, at the University of Texas at Austin and other places. And it's a Republican Party of Texas priority, still not seemingly a priority of the governor. But, you know, it is, I mentioned, it seems like a perpetual session, right? Because it started in January. We've had multiple special sessions. Now we're here in the middle of September looking at being in this session going into October.
Right.
And some of that delay might actually be costing taxpayers.
That's right. So we mentioned it earlier. Once again, it's on the special session call, which is the appropriation of these federal COVID relief dollars. So to be specific, there was, I think it was $1.9 trillion that the U.S. Congress passed to give to all 50 states in different amounts. Obviously, Texas specifically got $41 billion out of that $1.9 trillion, right?
Yeah.
Some of that came, for lack of a better term, earmarked. There was guidance, right, from the U.S. Treasury and what have you on what you could spend certain things on. But for lack of, there's $16 billion that Texas is flexible with, right? They can use for what it is they want. Well, Texas, and this was on the last special session call, but notably, not a single bill was filed to address it. Texas, if they address this, if they're currently in debt for unemployment claims to the U.S. Treasury, right? There's a fund, a trust fund, if you will, because of kind of how we as a state and the federal government reacted to COVID, right? We basically incentivized people to not work for a long period of time, right? And they could also put in unemployment claims. So the money, we had about $2 billion in this trust fund that was very quickly wiped out. And we ended up borrowing almost $7 billion from the federal government, right? We could have, if we were to have paid back the $7 billion by September 6th, there would be no interest on it. You just pay back the $7 billion, no problem, right? The tax rate, the payroll tax doesn't go up based on what its current rate is. I know it's complicated, right? But because they adjourned sine die a few days before then, because they didn't address it, now every day thereafter September 6th, hundreds of thousands of dollars get added onto this $7 billion debt. And so, you know, if you do the math, the next time the legislature convenes here, which will be the first day of the next special session on the 20th, we'll be on the hook for an additional millions of dollars just because we didn't address this.
That really, really dwarfs, I mean, what they think. They say that a day of special session to operate costs about $40,000-$50,000.
Right.
I mean, that really gets dwarfed when you start looking at those numbers as well.
That's right.
And just how much that delay is potentially costing Texas taxpayers. You had another article this week I want to mention, Jeremy. As we look back at the session and these special sessions and a number of these conservative priorities that haven't made it through, a lot of people ask, I think it's probably one of the biggest questions that people ask is, we keep electing Republicans based on this platform, based on these priorities, they go to the legislature, and yet for years and years and decades, really, those priorities don't get done. And why is that? And you looked at potentially one of the factors as to why that is. And looking at the record of the Republican House caucus chairman Jim Murphy and his own record.
That's right. So to be clear, I would agree that there's probably several reasons why this stuff doesn't get done, why we keep hearing from this stuff. But I think one of the reasons certainly we looked into was the House Republican Caucus Chairman is a state representative, Jim Murphy. He's a Republican out of Houston area. He got elected back in December as the caucus chairman. It should be noted, of course, that is a secret ballot. So you don't know out of the 83 Republicans who voted for him and didn't, but obviously a majority.
Yeah. And as caucus chairman, right, of the Republicans, he's supposed to be the leader. He should be kind of the gold standard of Republicans that's leading those 83 Republicans we have in the House.
Right. And notably, in his, basically his announcement that I'm now chairman, right, he didn't include anything about Texas Republican Party of Texas, Republican Party of Texas priorities, legislative priorities, didn't include anything about, hey, I'm looking forward to working for these. And you can just kind of take, and we did, we kind of scaffolded through the entirety of the session, all the record votes he took. There were significant votes where multiple times, I mean, I must have looked at 250 out of the 1,000 votes, where he was on the opposite side of the majority of his own Republican caucus on key issues, right? Like this is abolishing abortion, this is gender modification stuff. This is, he supports tons of corporate welfare stuff, if you will. He supports all kinds of stuff that is, I think, almost anyone, even if you're not the most conservative of a Republican, would say that's not necessarily a Republican issue.
Well, so you look at how he rates on certain indexes. That's, you got the fiscal responsibility index. Interestingly, he's one of the most liberal Republicans in the House. So you've got the Republican caucus being led from the left.
Right.
Conversely, you look at the Democrats, right, and you've got State Representative Chris Turner, who is a liberal Democrat from Arlington. He's leading the Democrats, has led them for the past several sessions. He's one of the most liberal members of the Democrats. So you've got the Democrat caucus being led from the left, and you've got the Republican caucus also being led from the left.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway, right? For those that maybe don't follow the Texas legislature religiously and wondering what the heck's going on, right, is that you basically have a House, and I hate that we're just picking on the House, but that is a problem child when it comes to the Republican Party of Texas priorities. You have the House, which is, yes, 83 members, but the reality is that most of House leadership comes from the left side of that paradigm, and they're much closer to Chris Turner, right, to your point, than they are the most conservative of members. And you see that time and time again.
Yeah, I think it's a great article. If you haven't checked it out yet, look through it. Look at those. I mean, it's just the facts, right? I mean, they just absolutely speak for themselves. And again, right, it's a secret ballot. You don't know which Republicans supported him.
Sure.
A lot of them, I think, are probably going to have to answer at the end of this special session for why a lot of these priorities haven't ended up passing. Also in legislative news, we actually got, briefly want to mention that we've got a special election. It seems like we always have a special election. Yeah. Are they really that special if there's one like every month?
Perpetual elections like this.
Yeah, so. Perpetual session, we got perpetual elections, we got special sessions, and we got a special election. So a special election for folks who live in House District 118, that's Eastern Bear County, to replace Leo Pacheco, who is a Democrat who kind of abruptly resigned. I think he had to resign because he had some work obligations or something to that effect.
Right.
And so the filing deadline for that is Monday, the 13th, and then you've got early voting already beginning on the 20th.
That's right. I think last I checked, there were already, I want to say, five Republican candidates that had, or five candidates that had had already filed, but to include one that was a former state representative for that area in the interim. He wasn't during a session, John Lujan, but it'll be interesting to see how that.
It's a traditionally Democrat seat. I mean, we've had a Democrat representing there for the past several years. But, you know, a special election, potentially with a runoff, whenever this election ends up being, right, that potentially you could see a Republican pull off an upset. We've seen that before in that area.
Yep.
Another big issue that has struck, really not just our side, but news nationally, has been this Heartbeat Act, of course, that was passed by the legislature earlier this year. Essentially, the premise of it is simple. If the heartbeat is detected, the life is protected. That went into effect on the 1st. And since then, you've seen just the pro-abortion mob really hound groups like Texas Right to Life, hound pro-life activists. And really anybody who supports the act, This week's Autopsy Files podcast, which will be going up at 2 p.m. today, I got the chance to speak a little bit with John Sego at Texas Right to Life about that bill, about how it came to be, how a citizen activist helped make it happen, and what the next steps are for the pro-life movement. That's going up at 2 p.m., but we'll give you just a little clip right now.
A new Texas law passed during the recent legislative session could protect numerous lives of unborn children in the Lone Star State, but it hasn't been without controversy. I'm Brandon Waltons, and on this episode of the Autopsy Files, we take a look at the Heartbeat Bill.
You're listening to the Autopsy Files by Texas Scorecard, a production of 1836 Studios.
The premise of the Heartbeat Bill is to make abortion illegal when a heartbeat can be detected, usually around 6 weeks after inception. Put simply, if the heartbeat is detected, the life is protected. But despite Republicans holding majorities in the state legislature for decades, it wasn't until this year that the major move was made.
Well, you can listen to that interview and some of that history again at 2 p.m. today. It'll be up at texasscorecard.com, but also we've got it up on Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to check it out then. And next week, we're going to have the topic of election integrity, certainly one that has ruled the news cycle this year. We'll find out exactly how, look back at how some of those bills actually came to be. And we've also got, I want to remind folks, we've got a whole suite of podcasts, right, at texasscorecard.com, including This Week in Texas, hosted by Jeremy Kitchen, which we're going to have new episodes every Monday, right?
Every Monday.
Every Monday, okay? So be sure to subscribe and check that out. Also want to be sure to invite everybody, if you haven't already, okay, gotten your tickets for the Conservative Leader Awards, now is the time to get them, okay? The event's December 4th. We're going to be meeting in Irving, Texas. Jeremy's going to be there. That's reason enough, right? I'm going to be there. Reason enough to come, but actually more importantly, right, it's always such a reunion of all the grassroots folks that sometimes we don't get to see in person throughout the year, so it's really, really an awesome event. It's December 4th in Irving. If you haven't gotten your tickets, early bird pricing is going on right now at texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. We'll put that link down there in the comments if you missed that. Going on now through September 15th. So if you want to lock in that early bird pricing, now is the time to do it. Be fiscally conservative. Get your tickets now. And lastly, I want to remind folks that we're accepting applications for the spring, summer, and fall of 2022 for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship here. If you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25 who's interested in conservative public policy, journalism, what have you, we'd love to have them on board here. So please feel free to share the news about that. I want to say hello to everybody watching. We've got Jill tuning in from Aubrey, Tara watching from Bedford, Diana in Toledo, Ohio. Which is not Texas, right? Watching from not Texas, but we'd love to have you there, Diana. Debbie watching from Waco, Virginia and Granbury. Sharon watching from Fort Worth. Of course, Tiffany joining us from Deer Park. Ruth watching from Houston. Again, I want to thank everybody for watching today. If you have any questions, comments that come to you afterwards, please feel free to drop them down there. I would love to get to them after the show. But for right now, I hope you have a great weekend. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know someone between 18 and 25 years old with an interest in public policy, effective civic engagement, political accountability, and Texas history? Then you've got to tell them about the Texas Scorecard Fellowship. Applicants need only to demonstrate a commitment to foundational conservative principles, strong character, and a committed work ethic in order to be competitive. This fellowship does not require applicants to be enrolled in a college or university, and fellows will be paid a $2,000 monthly stipend for the duration of their fellowship. At the end of the program, the ideal participant will leave equipped with the knowledge and the skills to effectively and meaningfully communicate through multiple media formats the public policy process of the state of Texas.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.